You're listening to The Takeout.
Above and beyond the call of duty.
With Major Garrett.
The Medal of Honor is the highest military decoration that a president can bestow.
They gave courage to the men around them.
The man you see before you today should not be alive today.
He was prepared to lay down his life.
We are profoundly grateful as Americans.
For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity in action at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty.
Welcome to the very best part of my broadcast week. I'm Major Garrett, Chief White House Correspondent for CBS News, joined as I am every week by the world's greatest podcast sidekick, Steve Shigaris, Political Director of CBS News. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Major.
So longtime listeners of this show will know that's a different kind of introduction. We've never done that introduction before because we've never done this kind of show before. We're coming up on Veterans Day, and quite a while ago, when we had David Barton, our senior national security correspondent with CBS News, on the program, I pledged to you that we would do a show devoted to one topic and one topic only, the Medal of Honor, the recipients and the stories behind those whom David has interviewed as part of covering that aspect of the United States military. And that's what the show is about. David Martin is with us. We're going to talk a great deal about heroism, the sacred honor that the Medal of Honor represents, and some interesting threads that sort of link those who have received the Medal of Honor and what they look back on in their military career and how the Medal of Honor has influenced them and how their stories have influenced our understanding of the American military. David Martin, thank you so much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Tell us what the Medal of Honor is.
Well, it's not glory, which I think is the popular misperception of the Medal of Honor. Medal of Honor is the worst day in a soldier's life when everything went wrong. He lost some good buddies, and only by a fluke did he survive. You never want to tell a Medal of Honor recipient congratulations for winning the Medal of Honor. They say this is not a prize you compete for. This is something you accept on behalf of soldiers you fought with.
On behalf of the fallen who died around you.
Yeah.
And do you ever detect, or have you ever detected, something that is somewhat common in the U.S. military, or all militaries, is survivor's guilt?
Oh, they all have survivor's guilt and no good explanation for why they weren't killed. And all of them, I mean, could just have as easily have been killed if a bullet had been one inch the other way, because in many cases they are running gauntlets of enemy fire, and they're out there in the open.
How many Medal of Honor recipients have you interviewed in your career?
Oh, boy. We must be close to 20 by now.
Common threads for you?
Common threads, something went very, very wrong.
Right.
The battle usually took place over a piece of worthless real estate. You name some of the places where these battles took place: Wanat, Afghanistan, Ganjgal, Afghanistan, Lui Nan Hill in Vietnam. Nobody knows where those are today, and it's hard to imagine that they ever had any connection to America's national security. But for that day and that time, it was the center of the universe for these soldiers, and they were willing to do anything to either take or hold that ground.
For those of you who are listening, we always build the show around a meal. We're going to have breakfast this morning. We're at Café Bonaparte in Georgetown. Café Bonaparte has a French aspect to it, so we want to acknowledge, as we always do when we can, the French for helping us win the American Revolution. Just thought I'd throw that in there, Steve.
Thank you. You mentioned wars recent and wars in distant past. Have you, how do these Medal of Honor recipients, when they get the medal, react? Does time change any of their memories? Have you noticed people who have fought in Vietnam and get it much, much later?
Well, I think what happens is over time, and the event recedes, and so I think the anger and the guilt that these soldiers feel also recedes. We interviewed one Medal of Honor recipient recently, a guy named Jim McLuhan, who looked as and acted as all-American and as well-adjusted as a human being can look. He was the coach of the high school sports teams, American Legion baseball, led the Memorial Day parade each day in his little community of East Haven, Michigan. But then once he got talking, the anger started to come out, and he said they'd been sent in there to a slaughter. And that's the way many of them feel. This is usually not the things that went wrong were not the fault of the troops. They usually were put into an impossible position by somebody higher up, and then didn't get enough backup, and the only thing they had to fall back on was their own courage.
You mentioned James McLuhan. We have some sound from James McLuhan. That's number four. Arden, will you please play that?
The worst 48 hours of my life, and I'm getting an award for it.
48 years later, he's receiving the Medal of Honor for his actions at a place called Nguyen Hill.
I knew we were in trouble immediately. You're going to have some casualties.
An all-around athlete in college, McLuhan had been drafted and sent to Vietnam as a combat medic.
I held 18, 19, or 20-year-old men in my arms, and I heard their last words, and I saw them take their last breath.
13 Americans lost their lives at Nguyen Hill, but McLuhan saved 10 men. By the end of the first day, McLuhan himself was hit by shrapnel. His commander told him to get on a medevac helicopter with the rest of the wounded.
I said, I'm not going. And he said, why not? I looked him dead in the face and I said, you're going to need me.
You mentioned he was drafted. Did you get a sense that there was more bitterness on his part because this wasn't his choice to go?
No, I didn't. He thought he was going to get a teacher deferment, and he just didn't get it. But he was glad to serve, and he was a very bright guy. They made him a medic, and there's one common theme in many of these Medal of Honor stories is that the person who's receiving the medal is the medic, because they're the ones that have to run about the battlefield trying to get to the wounded and then drag them back into safety.
You're listening to The Takeout, and this show is dedicated to the Medal of Honor as we head in toward Veterans Day. David, tell us a little bit about the process. How does this happen, and why does it sometimes take so long?
Well, it's a subjective process. You have to get, first you have to, your commanding officer has to put you in for the medal, and commanding officers grade on different scales. I mean, outstanding valor beyond the call of duty to one might simply be a soldier doing his job to another.
Yeah.
And so there's this element of subjective judgment. But then you also have to have corroborating witnesses. And there's a very interesting case of a Marine sergeant named Rafael Peralta, who had fallen on a grenade during to save his buddies during house-to-house fighting in Iraq. And just as Secretary of Defense Bob Gates was about to sign off on the Medal of Honor, he received an anonymous tip that Peralta was dead when he fell on that grenade. He had been shot in the head and was unable to make a conscious decision. So they had to suspend the Medal of Honor proceedings and convene a board which went back over his autopsy. And they decide that, that's right, he was instantly killed by a shot to the head. He could not have made a conscious decision to fall on that grenade. But you try telling that to his buddies,
right,
who were in that room. And I mean, I thought one of them was going to punch me out just because I was pressing him on how he could be sure that Peralta had made that decision. In the end, he was awarded the Navy Cross, which is the second highest award. But if you think about it, that doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, if he truly was dead when he fell, then he certainly deserves the Purple Heart. But
maybe not much else.
Maybe not much else.
That's the voice of David Martin, National Security Correspondent for CBS News. You are listening to The Takeout.
You're listening to The Takeout.
I'm Major Garrett, joined by Steve Shigaris. This show is devoted to one topic and one topic only, the Medal of Honor, as we head toward Veterans Day. We're very honored to have David Martin, CBS's national security correspondent, with us. He has done at least 20 interviews with Medal of Honor recipients in his long and distinguished career at CBS News. 3,518 Medals of Honor have been awarded by our government. 1,523 for the Civil War, 426 for the Indian Wars, 471 for World War II, 14 for the war in Afghanistan. And that brings us, in part, to a conversation about someone named Clint Romachet. We have one soundbite I want to play for you now, and then we'll have a longer one about Clint Romachet's amazing story in just a second. Play the first one, Arden.
3 years after the battle, Romachet was awarded the Medal of Honor, which struck him as both inappropriate and wrong.
It boils down to, why me? I didn't do anything special. Just did a job like 52 other guys there were doing that day, and eight that did way more than I ever was asked of. I mean, why me?
David, tell us a little bit about Clint.
Well, he's saying why me because eight of those 52 guys died that day. They were at a remote combat outpost in Afghanistan that the U.S. commanders in Afghanistan had already decided was a worthless piece of real estate. They had plans to pull out, but they kept getting delayed because then President Karzai didn't want them pulled out before an election because they might hurt him. So they were there really for political purposes, not for military purposes. They were sitting at the bottom of a valley, and if ever there were fish in a bowl, it was these guys down in the bottom of the valley, and the Taliban in all of the surrounding hills with just a clean line of sight down to them.
And so not only was it not militarily important, it was vulnerable.
It was more than vulnerable. It was not a place that you would put American troops. And the only way in was by helicopter, and the helicopters had to run a gauntlet down through the mountains, and they would get shot at as they were going in. There was just no real reason for having troops there. And so the Taliban attacked, and they very nearly came close to overrunning the base and killing all 52 who were there. But Clint Romachet ordered and organized a counterattack, which staved off the Taliban long enough for air support to arrive. And Clint Romachet delivered what to me is the greatest single line I've heard in all the years I've covered the military. When he was about to go out the door of this little shack they were taking cover in, he turned to his lieutenant and said, "We need to take this bitch back."
A little bit more on the Clint Romachet story. Arden, please.
Finally, this message went out. Keating reports negative contact with the enemy. But seven Americans lay dead, and one, Stefan Mace, the platoon cut-up, was gravely wounded.
We finally had that medevac coming in, and Mace was bagged up and ready to be put on it, still conscious. We all thought he was going to make it.
Sounds like at the end the battle came down to saving Private Mace.
That's what we were all hoping for.
So what happened?
They attempted to do surgery on him, but it was just too late. You know, I think those medics did a whole lot for Mace, but I think it was Mace that held on to life for as long as he did.
This battle was in 2009, right?
Yes.
So we're going on 7 years.
Oh, yeah.
Still with you, isn't it?
I hope it never leaves.
It never does leave, does it?
No. You could hear it in his voice. And when we were doing the interview on camera, you could really see it in his face. He was just reliving every moment of that. But what I took away from that is the old line, which turns out to be true every time, which is that the soldiers are fighting for each other. And there's another Medal of Honor recipient, Captain Will Swenson, who also received it for a battle in Afghanistan, who, to me, epitomizes this love that fighting men have for each other. They were in a valley ambushed by the Taliban, and they were taken wounded, called in a medevac, and as the medevac came in, one of the crew members on the helicopter had his helmet cam rolling. And so you see on this helmet cam, Swenson helping his sergeant, who was wounded, over to the medevac to get him on the medevac. And he gets him on the medevac, and then he leans in, and he gives him a kiss. And to me, that kiss in the middle of combat said everything you need to know about why these guys take such insane risks to protect each other.
Number seven, Arden, Will Swenson.
Swenson turned back to the battle and to the search for four missing Marines. By the time he and Marine Corporal Dakota Meyer, who already has received the Medal of Honor, got to them, they were all dead.
Dakota, myself, and a contingent of Afghans moved in the trench, and we began the horrible task of bringing those Marines off the battlefield.
When it was over and all the wounded evacuated, Swenson delivered a scathing sworn statement about the lack of artillery and air support that day, despite his repeated calls for help.
Were you bitter?
I definitely had some choice commentary. Was I bitter? I was angry.
He quit the Army, thinking his angry words had ruined his career. But Swenson missed being a soldier. So now the first Army officer since Vietnam to receive the Medal of Honor is asked to come back on active duty.
I just want everyone to know who's listening. We are going to post every single one of the referenced Medal of Honor stories where you hear David Martin interviewing the recipients on our website as a companion to this podcast itself. So those of you who are curious about this and want to dive deeper into David Martin, in some cases award-winning work on these stories, but they're all stories that have tremendous resonance. You'll be able to see each and every one of them in their entirety on our website once we post this episode. David, let's talk a little bit about one other theme that is kind of part of this. In some cases, there's some misconduct involved at higher levels in these missions that result in Medals of Honor.
Well, this battle that Will Swenson was in, two officers received letters of reprimand for failing to provide adequate air and artillery support to those troops that were trapped in that ambush in that valley. And Swenson was trying to call in artillery and airstrikes, and they simply wouldn't do it because they said it was too close to a village. And there's a procedure where the soldier on the ground can take personal responsibility if something were to go wrong by calling in a round, and that is, he puts his name on it. He's not just calling for a unit. He says, Captain Will Swenson is calling for this. And he even did that. He took personal responsibility for anything that would happen if civilians were hurt or killed in the artillery or airstrikes. And he still didn't get any artillery, and the air cover took an hour and a half to get there. An hour and a half.
Which must feel like several lifetimes as you're waiting for it.
If you're out there, literally, the Taliban were on both sides of the valley. They had machine guns, and they were just shooting down on them as these guys tried to make a run up the valley to get to those four Marines who were trapped in a village at the head of the valley.
That's the voice of David Martin, National Security Correspondent for CBS News. I'm Major Garrett, joined by Steve Chigueras. This is an episode devoted entirely to the Medal of Honor as we lead ourselves toward Veterans Day. You're listening to, and I certainly hope you're enjoying, The Takeout. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Takeout.
I'm Major Garrett, joined by Steve Shigaris, world's greatest podcast sidekick. We're at Cafe Bonaparte in Georgetown. This episode is devoted to the Medal of Honor, a little bit of Medal of Honor history in our country. Bernard Irwin, first recipient of the Medal of Honor for action at Fort Apache in Arizona. One woman has been a recipient of the Medal of Honor, and she was a civilian. Mary Walker, for being a nurse at Bull Run in the early part of the Civil War. If you are familiar with the Whitman Walker Clinic here in Washington, D.C., legendary for its AIDS research and treatment, Walt Whitman is the Whitman part of that name. Mary Walker is the Walker part of that name. David Martin, how is it that these stories come to you, and how do you begin the process of preparing and getting to know these recipients?
Well, the award is announced by the White House, and usually the service involved has already told me that it's coming, so I can start doing my research. But there's this process that you want to try and short circuit, which is as soon as a Medal of Honor recipient is named, the service involved, who obviously wants this to reflect as well as possible on the service, will assign a public affairs officer to that person. And then they'll bring them to Washington, put them in a hotel room near the Pentagon, and then send them through these round-robin interviews where every network and cable outlet sits down with them for 15, 30 minutes and does this quickie interview. We try to short-circuit that by going to the person's home, wherever they live, and getting to them before they're all interviewed out, before they've told the story 100 times. And also, you just get a better sense of a person when you go into their home, and you invariably come across memorabilia of the battle, or at least of their time in service, that they wouldn't have brought to Washington to give you. So it's you just get a much, much better interview. And then the best way is on, in particular cases, to circle back and interview them again after the ceremony, after they've gone on with the rest of their lives. And then they are really much freer to talk. I mean, it's not that they're telling you anything untruthful when they're being coached.
But they're somewhat guarded.
It's just that, for one, Ryan Pitts, who received the medal for a battle in Afghanistan, he said to me, valor was everywhere. Well, that's true, but that's not how soldiers talk. Mm-hmm. But that was his talking point.
How much do you get to interact with the families? And what is their feeling about all this? You mentioned that the recipients don't necessarily want this kind of medal, but do the families talk to you much?
They do. You know, the families know what the person they love went through, and in particular the one I remember best is the father of Dakota Meyer, who received the medal for another battle in Afghanistan. And he could see that his son, when he came back, was drinking way too much, gaining weight. And he knew that his son had a revolver in the glove compartment of his truck. So he made sure to take the bullets out of that revolver. And it turned out to be a good thing because one night Dakota had been drinking and he took that revolver out of the glove compartment and sat there thinking about it.
Wow. Let's hear a little bit more about the Dakota Meyer story.
So you've just spent the last 6 hours risking, which is not the right word, your life, throwing away your life to try to get to those guys.
Yeah.
And they're dead.
You feel nothing but being a failure, you know?
That you couldn't get to them in time.
Yeah. Most guys believe, you know, you either get them out alive or you die trying. If you didn't die trying, you didn't try hard enough.
Do you realize that what you did was extraordinary?
No, I don't. It would have been extraordinary if I'd brought him out alive. That would have been extraordinary.
It was, in every sense of the word, extraordinary what Dakota Meyer did. Give our audience a sense of what he tried to accomplish and what he risked trying to accomplish it.
Well, the first thing you got to know about Dakota Meyer is he was a Marine corporal, so he was in charge of very little that day. But everybody was going down with wounds, and so he just made the decision on his own to go forward and try to get to these four Marines who were
pinned down. Caught,
yeah, they were pinned down, and as it turned out, they were probably already dead when Dakota set off. But they were in this valley, and he's just driving down the valley, and he's in a vehicle with a machine gun on the top, and he's standing in the machine gun just
in the back in the bed of the truck,
firing
exposed
away.
As could be.
Yeah, and he could he can hear the rounds pinging off the his own gun, and just waiting for the one that doesn't ping off his gun and gets him square in the face. And I asked him, did you think you were going to die? He said, I knew I was going to die.
And he did this several times, not just once.
That's right. He went. He had to go back a second time to get him. And this is the same battle in which Captain Will Swenson received the Medal of Honor for. So they then hooked up, and they went back together. And then just as Dakota thought he had gotten to the four Marines, he jumped into this trench where he thought they were, and he landed on the body of one of them, and all four of them were there already dead.
The conversation you had with Dakota Meyer was 6 years ago. Do you stay in touch with these folks that you've interviewed, and do you check up on them?
You know, Dakota was our guest at the White House Correspondents' Dinner this past one. And if you notice in that interview, he had a very flat affect. That's not him at all. He's a very genial, outgoing guy. I mean, and when I visited him in Kentucky, I wasn't sure that this guy was really going to be able to handle all the fame that goes with being a Medal of Honor recipient, because he really is a country boy. But it turns out he took to it just fine, and he ended up marrying Sarah Palin's daughter.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. And you mentioned Ryan Pitts.
When Pitts ran low on grenades, he fought on with a machine gun.
He's going to die.
Suddenly, there was an awful silence all around him.
I thought everybody was dead. I thought I was the only one there.
And you were.
I was.
You're all alone. You're wounded. And the enemy's how close?
Close enough that they could hear him when I was talking on the radio.
Four soldiers rushed to his aid, but they were all cut down. One of them, Israel Garcia, was mortally wounded.
I just held his hand and we talked for a little bit. He wanted me to tell his mom and wife that he loved him.
The Apaches laid down fire within 10 meters, about 30 feet of Pitts, and finally beat the enemy back.
Nine guys died so the rest of us could come home. And valor was everywhere. Everybody was fighting as hard as they could. You know, no man fought harder than any other.
30 seconds before we go to break, David, tell us a little bit about that story. We'll continue more on the other side.
Well, Wanat, to me, is the quintessential battle of the Afghan war, because they were put out on a piece of, again, worthless real estate, because they withdrew from it 2 days after the battle, and they were left out there without enough support. Because Afghanistan was a quote-unquote economy of force operation. Next time you hear that, what that really means is not enough troops, because all the troops were in Iraq.
More with David Martin on the other side of this break. You're listening to, and I hope you're very much enjoying, The Takeout.
We'll
You're listening to The Takeout.
I'm Major Garrett, joined by Steve Shigaris. This episode devoted entirely to Medal of Honor recipients as we head toward Veterans Day. Our very special guest, David Martin, the National Security Correspondent with CBS News. A little bit more Medal of Honor lore. The first African-American in our country who was a recipient of the Medal of Honor, William Harvey Kearney, for action at Fort Wagner in South Carolina. If you have any familiarity with the movie Glory, that's what that is about. And if you don't have familiarity with the movie Glory, I highly recommend you acquaint yourself with it. There are 19 Americans who have been double recipients of the Medal Award. 19. The first was Thomas Custer. You might ask yourself, Thomas Custer, could that be the brother of George Armstrong Custer? Indeed, he is. And he died at the very same battle. Interesting lore of the Medal of Honor. David Martin, we were talking about Ryan Pitts and that particular battle in Afghanistan. Tell us a little bit more.
Well, the Battle of Wannat is one that is easier to understand than a lot of the others because there is extensive video footage of the battle. The troops were taking their own videos right up to the first shot, and then when the Apache gunships showed up to try and beat back the Taliban, their gun camera footage was recording everything from the air. Usually that stuff is not released, but in this case we were able to get a bootleg copy of those gun tapes, and so you see the battle from the vantage point of the Apache pilots, and you can hear them sort of muttering in amazement that the soldiers on the ground are calling in strikes so close to their own positions, like 10 yards away.
Very unusual.
Very unusual, because, you know, even if the fire is accurate, you can still get hit with shrapnel. And then they actually, when they're hovering over at the end of the battle, you can see the bodies of the dead Americans lying on the ground where they fell in combat. So it is a very graphic presentation of that battle. And I often think that when a Medal of Honor recipient sits down to do an interview, you know, he looks across at whoever's doing the interview and says, that's a civilian. How is he possibly going to understand?
Right.
But in this case, that video helped those of us who've never been there understand.
Mm-hmm. In late October of this year, October 23rd, at the White House, Mike Rose became a recipient of the Medal of Honor, a Green Beret medic for service in Vietnam. Arden, let's hear a little bit about that, and then I'll have more. David, explain.
Rose was on the last chopper out and saved the life of a crewman who had been shot through the neck.
He was going into shock, and I remember leaning down to him, and I said, can you say this on TV?
Try it.
Listen, you stupid son of a bitch. If you're going to die, you'd already be dead. And he came out of shock.
5 decades later, he's accepting the Medal of Honor on behalf of all the soldiers who fought in Laos.
Just keep putting one foot in front of the other. That's what you do. I mean, either that or you give up. Are you going to give up? No, you're not going to give up.
Sounds simple. Until you try to live or die by it.
That is one hell of a line. If you're going to die, you'd already be dead.
Yeah. And that little sequence leaves out the hairiest part of that episode. They were on the last chopper out. The chopper had lifted off. It was at about 3,000 feet when all of a sudden it went silent. They lost the engines. And so that chopper auto-rotated back down to the ground, and essentially a crash landing. And Rose was thrown free of the chopper. So then you've got a chopper full of all the other people who were still on that chopper when it took off, plus all the ammo and everything starting to cook off. He goes back on the chopper and starts pulling people out. And you ask him, you know, why did you do that? And he said, hey, I was the medic.
Right.
It was my job. If I hadn't done my job, I never would have been able to look myself in the mirror. Simple as that.
Mm-hmm. And that camaraderie is really goes all the way back to basic training, does it not? I mean, isn't that the core essential thing that is trying to be communicated to every member of the U.S. military in basic training, that locking of arms and that comradeship, and that is essential? That's the one thing that is never negotiable?
They certainly train it, but I don't think you really learn it until you're in battle.
Mm-hmm.
And what many of these soldiers will tell you is that when the battle started, the only thing that really happened was their training kicked in. And when you're in extremis, and it's hard to form a coherent thought, you're just going by muscle memory. And, you know, you often wonder what your muscle memory would be like mm-hmm. in a situation like that.
Indeed.
Just to change the subject, I've spoken to your longtime producer, Mary Walsh, about these pieces, and I know mm-hmm. the reverence she has for these subjects and for these stories. For you, in terms of your career, in terms of all the things that you've covered, where do you... Just describe sort of where it fits into your resume.
When you sent me the list of the soldiers we were going to talk about, I instantly had a mental picture of who they were. And some of these interviews we did, you know, some time ago. So they've all stuck with me as real human beings who went through something that the rest of us can't imagine. The Medal of Honor, it's important, but it is subjective. And there are plenty of guys out there and among this group who originally were given a lesser award, but then their own soldiers said, no, that's not right. They deserve a higher award. So I think that's why. They know that it's in part just a matter of chance that they are the ones who are going to receive this medal, and that's why, without fail, every one of them says they are accepting it on behalf of all the other soldiers that were there. We listened to Clinton Romache from a battle in Afghanistan, and we listened to Ryan Pitts from an battle in Afghanistan, and they were saying almost exactly the same thing. The numbers were different about the number of troops who fought, but otherwise they were saying exactly the same thing.
And they're uncomfortable with the terminology hero.
Oh, yeah. And I hope I can't prove this without going back and reading all of the scripts I wrote, but I hope I never called one of them a hero, because they wouldn't want to be called a hero.
Someone who did their job when they had to do it.
Did their job. And
on behalf of their brothers.
Under extreme pressure, which is the difference between just doing your job and doing the kind of job that merits the Medal of Honor.
That's the voice of David Martin, National Security Correspondent for CBS News. David, thank you.
My pleasure.
On behalf of Steve Chigaris, Major Garrett, you've been listening to The Takeout.
The Takeout is produced by Arden Fari and Katiana Krachenko. CBSN production by Alex Zuckerman and Eric Susanen. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Takeout Podcast. That's at Takeout Podcast. And for more, visit takeoutpodcast.com. The Takeout is a production of CBS News Radio.